From plants to insects, marine life, and more, combating invasive species in Maine. This week is National Invasive Species Awareness Week. Really? February may seem like an odd time to be talking about plants and insects, but experts say now is an ideal time to observe the natural world around you and take steps to prevent the intrusion of many invasive species. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn what we can do individually and as a society to combat everything from brown tail moth to Asian crazy worm to purple loosestrife. We'll also find out the latest on the emerald ash borer, the spotted lanternfly, and other invasive species relatively new to Maine. What can we control, and what invasive species are here to stay? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Spring is on its way, and with it, greater threats from a variety of invasive species in Maine. For years, we have heard of the harm these species can cause, both to people and to the environment. Today, we'll learn about some of the species of most concern, from insects to plants, and how to stop their spread. Joining me in the studio, Allison Canody. She is director of the Maine Forest Service's Forest Health and Monitoring Division, and she's the state entomologist. Nancy Olmsted is an invasive plant biologist with the Maine Natural Areas Program within the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And Gary Fish is Maine's state horticulturalist, who also has a background in entomology. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you seeing any signs of invasives yet this year? Do you have questions about how to eradicate them? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. I'll start with you, Allison. I have to admit that I was surprised that this is National Invasive Species Awareness Week. Why is this week in February?
Well, I can't speak to that as far as nationally. I don't know why the last week of February was chosen. However, from the perspective of us here in Maine, it isn't a bad week to think about invasive species in our forests and shade trees. And one of the ones that comes immediately to mind is brown tail moth. It's a great week to raise awareness about brown tail moth because we're getting close to the end of when you can effectively clip those winter webs.
Okay, so let's start with that and then talk about that. Brown tail moth is a species which I read is only on the coast of Maine and in Cape Cod, but for the communities affected by it, it's a really dramatic problem.
Right. It's native to Europe and parts of Africa and the Middle East, but it was brought over to the United States more than 100 years ago, and it's been in Maine for more than 100 years. In Maine, people believe that it's pretty much limited to the coast, but we're really starting to see populations further inland as well.
And so, you say it's a great time to clip nests. So it's a great time because there aren't leaves on the trees and you can step back and get a good look at those nests?
It's a great time because there's hundreds of caterpillars all cozy warm in those little nests ready to come out and eat your trees and lose their hairs and cause rashes and respiratory distress.
So if you're listening to this from one of those coastal towns where this is a problem,
Not just coastal.
How far inland is it now?
We see it pretty regularly in places like Bangor, Eddington, Etna, Burnham, Turner, Augusta.
So these towns know who they are, though. Now step outside, look at your trees, and clip nests. I want to turn to you and ask a big question, Gary. What is an invasive species anyway? I mean, there were no plants or insects here during the Ice Age. How do we define what's invasive and what belongs?
Well, that's a really tough question, Jennifer. I think that it depends upon who you talk to. But for the most part, we think of invasive species as being alien species. So they come from another part of the world, although there are some that we consider to be invasive that are growing in other parts of the United States. So often we look at what we call ecoregions, where there are similar habitats across a certain area. And if those plants have never been here prior to colonization, that we can tend to consider those to potentially be invasive.
And I'm sure we have to prioritize which to focus on and which not to. How is that determined?
So there are a couple of different committees that are always analyzing the different plants that might be invading into the state of Maine. And primarily we're looking at, will those plants move from where they might be planted into wild areas? So can they move from one habitat to another? And if they can get into a habitat that is sensitive or where we don't really want to have them there, excluding other plants, those are the kinds of things that we're going to place priorities on.
All right. Well, Nancy, I know over the years there's been a lot of attention given to purple loosestrife. I'll start by asking you to sort of let us know where we are in our fight against purple loosestrife and then talk about some of the other plants that you're keeping your eyes on.
Yeah, sure, Jennifer. So purple loosestrife is definitely still a problem in Maine. You tend to notice it in the late summer when it's blooming because it's so evident at that time. But it is around. It's widespread in Maine, and I certainly encourage folks to continue working to remove it by pulling it or digging it out.
And the reason it's such a problem is?
Yeah, so it can form dense stands and exclude native plants. We don't have it quite so bad in Maine at this time. There was an active effort with the biocontrol agents, and I believe that those have really helped to suppress the very, very dense populations. So if you look at photographs online, you'll see just a sea of purple. And we don't find that as often anymore. It's more a few plants here and a few plants there. But nevertheless, still damaging because it excludes native plants, which are the food sources for so many insects and our birds and other small wildlife that we love to see rely on those native plants.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are the other plants that are of highest concern right now in Maine?
Sure. One of the plants that I really worry about is a plant called glossy buckthorn, and this is it's a shrub, or it can be a small tree, and it looks a lot like a native cherry or potentially an alder or something like that. And this can invade the forest. So even in a shaded understory, it can get a hold and become very aggressive. Same with the shrubby honeysuckles. These are non-native shrubs that can form dense thickets. I could go on here, Jennifer. There's the Japanese barberry, which also is real problematic in forests and can harbor ticks.
Ooh, and I know Japanese barberry, or at least in the past, was sold at nurseries. Are the others as well?
Well, the glossy buckthorn, there was sort of a tall, skinny variety that I know was sold at one point, but I don't think it was ever super popular in this area. The shrub honeysuckles were brought many, many years ago by colonists for their flowers, which do have a sweet smell in the spring. And I think it was thought to be reminiscent of home for new colonists. So that's been around for a long time, but certainly there are many cultivars.
Well, I know that over the years there's been a real effort to reach out to nurseries in Maine and make sure nurseries are not carrying some of these invasives that are of high, are really high risk, if that's the right terminology. Gary, I see you nodding over there. How's that going?
So that's one of my programs, and we have two assistant horticulturists that are inspecting all of the nurseries and all of the stores that sell plants, including the big box stores. And because the development of the list of 33 plants that are no longer allowed to be sold was developed over about a 10-year period, almost all of them are on board. We don't really see problems with anyone selling those plants. It's very unusual. Where we still see some problems is with online sales. And we would hope that people are concerned about this and they know which of the plants are restricted, which I'm sure we can post on your website, that if they see those being offered for sale, that they would let us know. They can always email horticulture@maine.gov to let us know if there's a plant that's being sold that shouldn't be sold or imported into the state.
So this is interesting. I have a new house, say, and I want to plant a garden. I know if I go to my local nursery that I'm probably not going to be sold something that's on that list of 33 invasive plants. But if I order from a catalog, I can't be so certain. Is there no way, or has there not been an effort to pass some sort of regulation saying that these plants can't be shipped to Maine?
So the regulation is in place. It's not legal to import them either. And we do work with lots of nurseries across the country through a network called the National Plant Board to let those folks know that there are prohibited plants in Maine. And for the most part, commercial nurseries know that. The places where we have problems are small people that are selling things online. They are even selling things like wooden objects that may have invasive beetles in them and things like that, which is a huge problem for our program as well as for Allison's program. And those are really hard to get a hold of. And we work together again with the National Plant Board and others to try to work with Amazon and with all the other online sales, Etsy especially. And a lot of them have helped a lot, and we're still working on that. But it's not perfect, and we definitely want to know if people see things being sold online that they're concerned about so that we can address it head on.
Allison, I see you nodding out of the corner of my eye. And so in Maine for a long time, it's been illegal to bring firewood in, you know, if you're camping or for whatever reason in over state lines. But this is the first I've heard of this. So people are selling sort of crafted items from other places, and even those coming in the mail can bring invasive insects.
Yeah, so a lot of times you might think you might not know where your products are coming from, but there are shippers who have less tracking, say, of that material.
So what
others.
Kind of things are coming? Are we talking about birdhouses, wooden playsets, sheds? What's bringing these insects?
I'd say it's a jungle out there. There's all sorts of stuff available for mail order online, and some of it's, you know, larger businesses that might, you know, be more in tune with what the regulations are. There may be individuals who may not even know what the regulations are, and then maybe those who don't care as well.
So how does one, I mean, really, it's exciting. How do you order something responsibly then?
Well, it's tough. A couple of years ago, there was even a group of people that were selling religious objects door to door to churches and others that ended up having what was olive wood had invasive beetles that were coming out of it. So it's very difficult, especially if you're looking at any kind of a wooden object that especially has bark on it, or has not been heat treated or processed in some way. There's really a potential there. And if it is coming from another continent, then we're going to be a lot more worried about it than if it's coming from within the United States. But even then, you don't know where that original wood came from and could be infested.
Okay, so we've already talked about brown tail moth, and we've already talked about loosestrife. I think most people have heard about these, but there are some plants that and insects that I think people have not heard about. And I want to start with talking about an insect. I'm looking through my notes here. I'm trying to find the name of it here. Oh my goodness! What else are you looking at? What have I? What
spotted
am I missing?
Spotted lanternfly.
Yes,
okay.
Spotted lanternfly.
Sure.
Thank you. Tell me about spotted lanternfly.
Well, spotted lanternfly is one that it got established in Pennsylvania in the Philadelphia area a few years ago. It was brought over most likely on a shipment of slate or other type of rock that it had laid its eggs upon, and it's a little bit like the gypsy moth because it lays its eggs on just about anything. So trying to prevent its spread has been very difficult. In fact, where they have done a lot of the work is regulating the trucking industry, and they actually have drones that go over the top of trucks to look for the potential egg masses on the tops of the trucks and the railways, and there's so many different pathways that it can be spread. And the problem with it is that it comes from Asia, Korea, China, and it seems to attack many, many different types of plants, including grapes, as well as apples, as well as a number of hardwood species, and it sucks the life out of them and then produces a copious amount of excrement, which is actually honeydew, and that sweet honeydew causes sooty mold to grow. So for grape growers or for apple growers, they end up with a crop that's covered with this black sooty mold and makes their crop unsaleable. And for backyard homeowners, they end up with their picnic tables covered with all kinds of sooty mold, and it's pretty gross. And it's amazing, if people want to go look at some cool videos, they'll see videos of these swarms of spotted lanternfly that are pooping out all their honeydew, and it's just draining right out of them. It's very impressive. They're quite an impressive insect, and they're very beautiful, actually, and easy to identify. And one of the things that we want people to look for is something called the Tree of Heaven. It's also called Ailanthus, and it seems to be their primary host where they do most of their reproduction. But we're hearing now that possibly they're reproducing on other plants as well. And if they do make it to Maine, they could be a potential big problem.
Okay, this all sounds very discouraging, Nancy. I'm going to turn to you. And what can all of us as, you know, landowners, homeowners, citizen scientists, what can we do to help?
Yeah, well, there's a lot we can do. So as an individual landowner, obviously, you have your own property to steward. And so, first of all, removing any invasive plants that are already on your property is a great first step. I know in my own yard in Portland, there were several species that we had to tackle, and it's a process over time. Removing those is a great start, because even if you don't see them being aggressive in your yard, the birds can carry seeds far afield, and so that can spread the problem. Another thing that you can do as a landowner is to keep an eye on any materials that come to your property. So whether you're having gravel brought in to do driveway or road building, or whether you have mulch or compost or plants that have soil with them, you just want to monitor those areas and make sure you're not getting anything unwanted along with the material that you ordered. Because many invasive plants and also insects and even earthworms can hitchhike in this material. So monitoring where things have been brought in is really important and something that we can all do. And then as a community scientist, I would say that something that's important is just to be aware of your surroundings and report things. We have an online mapping tool called IMAP Invasives, which folks can use to report especially invasive plant species. I know the Forest Service and the Horticulture Program have other ways to report as well. But for the invasive terrestrial and wetland plants, we're really using IMAP Invasives as our central repository. And so I would encourage people to go ahead and get an IMAP Invasives account and give us those reports of invasive plant species.
Sure. And I put a link to the IMAP Invasives on today's Maine Calling Facebook post. And we'll also have that on our webpage. You mentioned earthworms. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about Asian crazy worms and others. But right now, we are going to go to a break. If you want to ask questions or if you have thoughts about invasive species in Maine, you can call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Foothills Management, committed to energy-efficient senior housing and commercial space in western and mid-coast Maine. Learn more at foothillsmanagement.com. Abbey Museum, Maine's only Smithsonian affiliate, open every day with a full schedule of family-friendly programs and workshops. abbeymuseum.org. And Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at USM, with a two-day program on racism, March 4th and 5th. maine.edu/Ollie.
250 years after his birth, Ludwig van Beethoven is still a towering musical figure. But how was he known in his own time?
He was writing subversive, radical music, which was not totally appreciated by the audiences of the time, nor even by the orchestras who were sight-reading them on very little rehearsal.
The life of Beethoven this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Radio isn't the only trusted source for journalism available to you from Maine Public. There's also Maine Public Television. Each evening between 5 and 6, there's now a full hour of BBC News. Following that, at 6, there's the PBS NewsHour, which is also available at 7 each evening. The Maine Public Television early evening news block schedule can be seen at mainepublic.org. Please click on the television dropdown to see it.
The wood is beautiful.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about invasive species in Maine, what problems they present, and what can be done to stop their spread. My guests are Nancy Olmsted, who is an invasive plant biologist with the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry, Gary Fish, who's the Maine State Horticulturist, and Allison Canody, State Entomologist and Head of the Forest Health and Monitoring Division. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. So I promised that before the break that we would talk about Asian crazy worms. I saw a video of them this morning. I think somebody who wants to create a horror film ought to see a video of these worms. Tell us about them, Nancy.
Sure. Well, these are an earthworm that behaves very erratically when disturbed, as you saw on the video. And unfortunately, they're gaining a toehold in Maine. They are from Asia, as the name suggests, and they have tiny, tiny little cocoons that can be present in the soil and that can accidentally be moved around. And they really churn through the really great soil organic matter in that top layer of the soil and create an environment where it's much harder for seeds to get started. They'll degrade the forest floor of all that litter and duff that makes it a good place for new plants.
So what's being done to try to stop their spread?
Oh, gosh, that's a really tough question. Yeah,
Gary, so that would be my department, and not enough. And it's just becoming kind of a big topic across the country, especially in Vermont and Wisconsin and a little bit in Oregon as well and in a few other states. There is a lot of concern, especially in Vermont, but also here in Maine, because if they do get into the forest, they could be a problem for maple growers. So if you love your maple syrup, Asian crazy worms might interrupt some of that because they basically take that top layer of duff away, and then the trees have exposed roots and the trees are very stressed and creates more problems that way. So what we're trying to do is encourage people to follow some best management practices. One would be to bare root plants when you sell them, especially if you're having plant sales or plant exchanges, to, after you dig them, wash the soil away and sell them as bare rooted plants. It's a lot harder when you get into trees or larger shrubs. So we're hoping that our nurseries that we work with are looking for these worms and doing what they can to discourage them as well. And then the other area is with importing, as Nancy mentioned earlier, things like mulch or compost or manure. In fact, I just spoke to someone this morning that had no crazy worms until they imported a bunch of manure. And they noticed that when they were shoveling it off from this very large load in the truck, that there were lots of worms, and they didn't think anything about it. And they spread that on their property, and now they have invasive worms there that are doing very well. They've been there for about 5 or 6 years, I think he said, and they are spreading and doing very well. And that was up in Patton, so it's northern Maine, so they will do fine in all parts of the state.
So, and just to be clear, the earthworms most of us are familiar with are much larger than they're also invasive, but not as damaging, correct?
Yes and no. There are some European earthworms that are similar in size, and there are some that are much larger, and they all have different habits. Some of them go very deep in the soil, and some do not. One of the problems with the crazy worms is that they stay right at the top of the soil, just underneath that duff layer, and then they are very voracious in eating that, and that is what creates the problems for the forest, as well as those ephemeral plants that try to come up in the springtime in that duff. So potentially they're a huge problem for wildlife habitat as well as for the forest.
Susan on Facebook says, my sister got advice from Ontario Forest Service to remove small, low-growing plant to interrupt the life cycle of a noisy white grub 2 inches long, white pine borer, I think. Do you have information about this? Is that something, this is in Ontario, is that an issue here?
So not certain exactly what she was seeing in Ontario. I don't know. We have a whole bunch of pine borers in Maine. One of them that people frequently see is a white-spotted sawyer. It looks really similar to the Asian longhorn beetle. So that's something that often piques people's interest. When they see that white-spotted sawyer, they think that maybe it's that invasive Asian longhorn beetle. But the wood borers that we have in pine tend to be native beetles that are important in recycling the material back into the soil as they attacked the declining and dead parts of the trees.
So even though there are a lot of things we're worrying about right now, that's not one of them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of beneficial insects that look similar to some of our invasive insects out there. There's a lot of bugs out there doing good things in the woods.
Okay, we'll go to Alan, who's calling from Searsport. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, bittersweet. It's just a terrible vine that takes over big trees and chokes them out. It's so bad in Castine, and there's a place right on Route 1 just before Camden Hill State Park. And it's been there for years. I don't think people know about it, but so worried about they're going to take over the forest, and it's not a good thing.
Alan, I'm so glad you called. I think you are speaking for thousands, if not tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Mainers and their frustration with bittersweet. Nancy, you're having your own battle with it, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. This is a plant that I struggle with in my own yard, and you just have to be tenacious and determined. You really have to be persistent with trying to get rid of bittersweet. And this is a plant that we're not going to eradicate from Maine, but eradication is not the only good goal, at least with plants. There are good goals in terms of keeping it from killing the trees, keeping it from getting to be those large vines that do strangle and girdle the trees, or keeping it from spreading into the uninvaded parts of the forest. So although nobody wants to see bittersweet behaving aggressively and climbing all over the trees, there are things that can be done.
So, Nancy, what are you doing? Are you just pulling it up and pulling it up and pulling it up?
At this point, the vines that I have are resprouting from the roots, and they're just real small. So in the late summer or early fall, when they turn that bright yellow color, the leaves turn a bright yellow color, I just go and pull them up. So that's what I'm doing. But on some of the properties that I help manage, we are cutting the large vines and either doing a cut stem herbicide treatment, or we are also pulling the small vines or repeatedly cutting.
Gary?
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that it's illegal to sell the wreaths that you see with the orange berries on them, that those are easily spread by birds. So one of the ways that we are controlling these species is through the banning of sale or import. And so one of those would be the Oriental bittersweet or the Asiatic bittersweet, and the wreaths that are made from those are illegal to sell. And I just also wanted to point out is that with something like Asiatic bittersweet, it's statewide almost. It's found in many, many areas. So it's nice to know where it is. If it's on private property, there's no way to compel someone to take care of that. On some of our public properties, that's where Nancy comes in and does a lot of great work trying to control invasive species there. But when it comes to private properties, the law does not compel anybody to control their invasive species. It's only preventing sale and import, and that's it.
Alan, thanks so much for your question. We'll go to Jan calling from Rockport. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I'd like to know about how far north hemlock woolly adelgid has reached in Maine, and what is the situation for Knox County, where I live. I understand that there's a ban against it, but I don't know much about it.
So hemlock woolly adelgid has been found along the coast through Knox County into Camden. As far as in the forest setting, we've seen it in planted and ornamental hemlocks, really all the way to Lubeck, but most recently in places like Bar Harbor and Sedgwick, places like that. Mm. So that's where it's known. Inland, we aren't seeing it very far inland at this point. However, we do have infestation on Fry Island in Cumberland County, which is in Sebago Lake, and also in Raymond Neck, really adjacent to that island township. As far as the ban, there is a quarantine on moving rooted hemlock out of the quarantine area, the area that is regulated for hemlock woolly adelgid, and also regulations on movement of material with the tops of trees in it, so like chips and stuff.
And how is hemlock woolly adelgid spread?
It is spread in a number of ways. And I guess when I talk about the quarantine, we're trying to target human-assisted spread. The natural spread of hemlock woolly adelgid is on things like birds and wind, so things we have very little control over. But artificial spread, it'll spread very easily on a rooted plant because it only takes one insect to start a population. And it also can spread certain times of years in the times of year in the top material, the branches and that sort of stuff of the tree, where they have either the eggs or crawlers in abundance in the spring and summertime. That's when you can really spread it.
Jan, thank you for your question. Leah on Facebook says, non-migratory Canada geese are technically a nuisance species rather than invasive, but they too are a very serious problem that needs to be addressed in many areas of Maine. What, if anything, is being done to reduce their population and impact on the environment? I didn't know that. I like seeing the Canada geese.
So Canada geese are definitely a native species, and it is true that a lot of them are not migrating anymore, and they're staying year-round. And they certainly do create problems both with their excrement, which is not nice to have to deal with, especially if you have a lakeside or pondside property where they come up quite often. The Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Department are involved with that and do some work and do outreach to towns or others that are concerned about it and have recommendations for managing those geese in a way that, for the most part, is not killing them, but excluding them from getting up into areas where they're creating problems, especially with their excrement. But it's definitely an issue. It's even an issue for me. I have a place on Flying Pond in Mount Vernon, and there are many geese that stay there, and they've been a problem for some of the neighbors, and I've been able to help them basically change the way that they mow and treat their lawns, because they love manicured lawns. So one of the easiest things you can do, which is also good for the lake, is to stop mowing right up to the water and to put in some other low-growing vegetation that discourages them from coming up.
We'll go to Bob calling from Weld. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. I have high bush blueberry bushes, four of which have reached the height of about 7 feet, and they're very productive. And I noticed this is probably the second or third year, but I noticed what looked like new sprouts because it mimics the blueberry very closely. But I believe it's bamboo, and I'm wondering what I can do about that.
Everybody's kind of looking at each other with a puzzled look on the face. If it's growing right in the blueberry bush itself, Allison, I'm thinking that could be a parasite, right?
Which is broom.
It'd be caused by a fungus, a rust fungus. But if that would be growing on the stem itself, if it's coming out of the soil, it may be new vigorous shoots from the blueberry. I would look at the twigs and the buds and see if they look similar to what's on the more vigorous growth of the bush itself.
Is there someone you could recommend that Bob would call to have come look at his, is there maybe the extension, the cooperative extension, or?
Yeah, oftentimes you can share a picture with cooperative extension, and that would be a potential way. There is a small fruit specialist with that group.
Okay, good luck to you, Bob. We'll go to Sarah on Facebook here. Says, Asian longhorn beetles killed the beautiful Scotch pines in our yard. By the time we noticed them, it took less than 2 years for the trees to die. How do I protect my other trees from more damage?
So that's really a good illustration of a native beetle that looks a lot like an invasive beetle and causes some misattribution of damage. So what was in their pine trees, their Scots pines, was probably the white-spotted sawyer or one of its relatives.
Not the Asian longhorn.
Not the Asian longhorn beetle. Now, what killed it was probably something else. It could have been a needle cast disease. They've been really prevalent in the Scots pines recently, and so it could have been killed by or predisposed to damage by that needle cast disease and then killed by something else.
Okay. Let's see. An email from Marilyn. Are the rosy glow barberry shrubs invasive? If they are, how should a large hedge of them be removed?
Mm. Well, Marilyn, yeah, I think that the short answer is that yes, as far as we know, all the barberries are invasive, and I would encourage the removal of that hedge. And you can cut them out and continue to cut, so they will resprout. You can have them dug out and disposed. If they have fruits on them, I would encourage you to consider removing the fruits and disposing those as trash so it doesn't accidentally spread the problem. But yes, sadly, some of our landscape items do need to be removed so that we can address these invasive plants.
All right, Marilyn, thanks for your question. We're going to go to another quick break. If you'd like to ask questions about invasive species, especially insects and plants, call us at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you may be able to get an email in there to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Rooster Brother, located in downtown Ellsworth. Grateful for the support of passionate cooks and coffee lovers for over 30 years. And Breakwater, curiosity for life, offering exceptional day school and after school options for toddlers through 8th grade. BreakwaterLearning.org.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On February 24, 1887, novelist Mary Ellen Chase was born in Blue Hill. In 1935, Chase published Silas Crockett, the story of a Maine seafaring family, which became her best-known work. She also wrote children's books, literary criticism, and three autobiographical books. Chase was a 1909 graduate of the University of Maine. Chase held several PhDs and honorary degrees and taught at both the University of Minnesota and Smith College. She died at the age of 86.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries. Happy birthday, Maine!
I'm Greg Dalton. On the next Climate One, no one calls themselves a climate refugee.
The Geneva Convention does not provide for persecution by climate change.
But climate disruption is displacing people abroad and at home.
There's a tendency to think, well, that's not really happening here. We can't have internally displaced people in the United States, can we? But it's happening.
How climate fuels migration on the next Climate One.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what can be done to reduce the harm caused by different invasive species in Maine? Joining me, Gary Fish, state horticulturalist and entomology expert. Allison Canody, state entomologist and head of Maine's Forest and Health and Monitoring Division. And Nancy Olmsted, who's an invasive plant biologist. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We have Roberta in Norway. Hi, Roberta. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm actually in Norway today, but our office is in Auburn. I'm calling from the Lake Stewards of Maine, and I'm the Invasive Species Program Director there. And I just wanted to remind your listeners, even though our lakes are all frozen over right now, that our lakes and ponds and rivers and streams in Maine are also very vulnerable to invasive species, and that anyone who puts something in one water body and then moves to another water body could inadvertently be a vector for invasive aquatic species. So one easy thing that your listeners can do is there's like a mantra, very simple 1-2-3 step, clean their gear between water bodies very thoroughly, drain any water out of the gear, and then allow the gear to dry thoroughly between water bodies. And if step three is not possible, if there's not a day or two to dry your gear, then you need to be much more fastidious about step one and two, cleaning and draining. And then the other thing I wanted to say that anyone who enjoys spending time out on our lakes and ponds and rivers could be a very important early detector. Maine citizens who are alert and informed have been early detectors for a number of known infestations, and the earlier we catch these infestations, the more chance we have of actually addressing them well. And so anyone who wants to learn more about that could contact the Lake Stewards of Maine, and I'll post something on your Facebook page about it. And last, I just wanted to give a shout out to our invasive plant patrollers, the thousands of people who have come to free training to learn how to be really formidable early detectors, and who are surveying their lakes and ponds and rivers on a regular basis and keeping them clean and free of invasives for the rest of us. So I just want to thank all of you IPPers out there for that.
And Roberta, I'm so glad that you called in today. And I know that the story that you tell is really a wonderful story of how vigilance has really paid off, right?
It has. And we're battling them back. Because of the early detection, we actually have been able to take several water bodies off of the infested list and put them on the non-infested list. And so we're doing it here in Maine in ways that other parts of the country have not been able to do it. But it takes a lot of vigilance, and that's a wonderful rule for really anyone who loves our lakes and ponds and rivers to get involved in that program. And it's really fun work. That's the best thing about it. It's good work. It's important work. But, you know, it's just one more great excuse to be out on a beautiful lake or pond in the summer on a nice day. So it's great work.
Thank you, Roberta. Gary, you want to say something?
Yeah. Hi, Roberta. Great to hear from you. I'm an invasive plant patroller, too. But
what you're an IPPer?
Yeah, I'm an IPPer. But I wanted to mention that it's amazing how people have come around the invasive plant control and management, and you know, people are very aware of that, and there's a lot of resources put into it. And it's unfortunate that the same doesn't happen for things like the Asian longhorn beetle or the emerald ash borer or other organisms that are causing similar problems. And we also agree that the eyes and ears of everybody out there are needed. The Asian longhorn beetle was first found in somebody's pool, so you can look at your pool filter and find things like invasive species. And we hope that many out there will learn what these species are and how to find them. And we do a lot of training with landscapers and arborists and folks like that, as well as people that love their lakes. And it's wonderful to see what's happened in the aquatic invasive side, and hopefully we can have that happen in other areas as well.
Roberta, thanks for calling in. I'm going to go to an email from Jake. Jake says, funding is available from Natural Resources Conservation Service for private landowners to fight invasives. You know about this, Nancy?
Yeah, so the Natural Resources Conservation Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture provides funding for farmers or woodland owners to work on invasive species plants, as what I'm most familiar with, on their properties. And if you contact your local NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, field office, I believe there are 10 or 12 field offices in Maine, you can talk to someone there about signing up for potentially getting some assistance.
Yeah, and we do get questions sometimes about whether that funding is available for control of invasive insects, and it is not part of that program. So it really is that invasive terrestrial plant focus of that funding.
An email from Tanya. I do hope when discussing the spread of invasive plants that DOT is discussed. Purple loosestrife and bamboo and the frag mites that are spread annually by DOT is widespread in Maine along our roadways. The DOT digs contaminated soil up when digging and then dumps it willy-nilly in whoever's yard has a sign out for fill. My question, why are not DOT workers trained to identify invasive plant species? This training could be required of all workers.
I want to take this one.
Okay, Gary.
So the good news is that they are getting trained now, and there is a lot of work being done by the Department of Transportation. They even have partnered with organizations that are promoting native plants, and so the page has been turned at the Department of Transportation. The problem is that there are so many people involved in building roads and maintaining roads that trying to herd all those cats is very difficult. And the educational process has started, and I think that they've made a real good effort at changing the way that people think about it. And so I would say yes, in the past a lot of that happened and a lot of plants were moved around, and that's unfortunate. But I think that the page is turning.
The other thing that I wanted to say about the sides of roads are just that they're an optimal environment for invasive plant establishment. You think about it, it's sunny. There usually is a mowing regime in parts of those for safety reasons. And so you've got some area that plants can get established. So it's a very challenging environment, even with things like birds or wind dispersing invasive plant species. So that's something to keep in mind there. But I agree with Gary that we at the Natural Areas Program have been in partnership with Maine DOT to work on the issue of invasive plants. And I've done trainings for DOT folks and was working with them on an infestation of black swallowwort up at the Katahdin Scenic Overlook on 95 last summer. So as Gary said, they are aware of this issue and addressing it as they can.
Right, and they've recently partnered with the Wild Seed Project as well as the Xerces Society, so looking both at installing pollinator plants as well as many more native plants and trying to remove those invasives that they have out there. So they're doing a lot.
We have an email here from Louise. After 14 years in the same yard, I am still struggling with something variously called goutweed and false carrot. As a flower that looks like Queen Anne's lace and the roots smell like carrots, but it's terribly invasive. I pull it, mulch it, would like to blowtorch it, and was so desperate at one point I was almost ready to get the Roundup out again. What do you recommend for Louise?
Oh, boy. Yeah, persistence, Louise. I think you're doing all the right things. This is a plant that can spread by fragments, and it's clonal, so it sounds like you already had a vigorous population. So I would encourage persistence and keep trying to keep that population in its current envelope and just keep whacking away at it over time.
All right.
And it's one where you have to keep your equipment clean. So a lot of people get it because they have people mowing from other yards that come in, or they have their field mowed by someone that does not clean their equipment. So you want to make sure that you, when you hire someone to come in, that they have clean equipment.
Sean and Garland, go ahead.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I've got a real problem with the Japanese honeysuckle. Everywhere there's any open space, it is just taking over. And I cannot beat it back no matter what I do. Cut it, pull it, I'm just losing. Every year it grows more.
Nancy, you have experience with this as well, don't you?
Well, I do. So they're just very aggressive plants. And so I have used the cut stem herbicide technique in cases where I found the population to be aggressive and beyond what we could keep on top of with repeated cutting. In all of these invasive species managements, we really have to be persistent. And I applaud your persistence, and I also just say keep at it. This is a long-term.
When you talk about cut stem herbicide, what do you mean exactly?
Sure. So with woody plants, rather than doing a foliar application, sometimes the plants are too large to safely spray with a foliar application. You can do what's called a cut stem or a cut stump treatment, where you cut the woody stem and immediately apply an herbicide solution to the growing part of the plant tissue.
So just kind of paint it on or drip it on?
Yeah, not with an actual brush. You'd want to use a contained applicator, you want to get those growing cells on the outside of the woody stem. And I will say, just for clarity, that the honeysuckles, the shrub honeysuckles, they are Asiatic in origin, but the quote Japanese honeysuckle is a vine, which, as far as I'm aware, we don't have in Maine outside of a couple planted locations. So if someone is finding a vining honeysuckle, please do let me know. But the shrub honeysuckles that we do find commonly through Maine can be difficult to get rid of, especially in open areas where they really thrive.
All right. We have an email from Betty. We are a licensed pest control company in Maine, and a few years ago, we treated a house with powder post beetles. The homeowner had received a wooden tiki statue from a friend in India, which had a few adult beetles in it. It took a year, but the next summer, there were new pinholes and young emerging from her support beams in the basement. I now advise clients to alert us of any wooden items they have recently brought into their home. This is what you all were talking about before.
Right. That's a great point. And there are controls in place through the National Plant Board and other national plant organizations across the country, but it's not fail-proof. And So items do get through, and any time that you order something from an exotic place, you may want to ask them about whether or not it's been treated or if it came from an area where there might have been infestations, or you might want to quarantine it for a while and keep it in a bag or something like that until you give it a few months or even a year or two to see what comes out of it.
So if you got something like a tiki statue from a friend and kept it tied in a sort of a black plastic trash bag for a year, that would take care of anything?
Well, that might help you catch it. I wouldn't say it's foolproof, but that would at least keep it from allowing it to come out and infest your home.
Okay. Go ahead, Nancy.
I guess I would say that if you get a piece of furniture or a statue or something like that and you see sawdust coming out of it, mm-hmm. Contact Gary's shop. I'm going to say Gary's shop or USDA APHIS just to let them know in case it is something that is potentially harmful to our environment if it escapes from your statue or furniture or whatnot.
Well, you can also put small items in the freezer.
Good idea. Which
may or may not work. It'll help.
Well, we're getting toward the end of the hour. We have so many questions we haven't been able to answer. And Allison, you had just said contact Gary's shop. If someone's listening and they have a concern and they call one of you, you're able to, if you're not quite the right person, help them figure out who is the right person, correct? If somebody calls the Department of the Forestry or the Maine State Horticulturist, you all share information.
Absolutely.
And we'll try to help people who are looking for information.
Absolutely. Do we have time for one last? One thing I did want to mention is a lot of times people will report their finds on a place like iNaturalist, which is a great program for connecting us to nature, but it doesn't necessarily connect back to people who are trying to watch for invasive species. So if you suspect you have an invasive species, it's fine to put it on iNaturalist, but we'd also love it if you could reach out to the state agency or the federal agency that's looking after that particular part of the environment.
Okay, and we'll put all sorts of links on our website, the Maine Calling website, but just generally, if somebody wants to call the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Forestry, someone there will find the right person. You all are all nodding for the record.
Yes.
And right before we go, I know you wanted to put in a plug, Nancy, for native plants.
Yeah, so there are great choices in the native plant realm. So for planting in your yard for your next landscaping project, we really encourage you to choose native plants that will help support our beneficial insects and birds and butterflies and all those great creatures that we love in the state of Maine and that are so precious and part of our landscape.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here so much. That was Nancy Olmsted, who's an invasive plant biologist with the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. Also here with us, Allison Canody, director of the Maine Forest Services Forest Health and Monitoring Division and State Entomologist, and Gary Fish, who is Maine's State Horticulturalist. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as all sorts of links at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.